Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Dharma, incomparable, profound, and minutely subtle, pervading the entire universe, revealing itself right here, right now. Yet it is rarely experienced, even in hundreds of thousands of millions of eons. We now can see this, we can listen to this, we can express and know this. May we completely understand and actualize this Tathagata's true meaning. Good evening again, everyone. Welcome again to all of you. I was going to begin by saying that I hope you're all doing well. But I think given all that we're experiencing right now in the world, all that we're experiencing in our lives, it can become rather confusing to know whether we're doing well or not. And so I think I'd rather just say that I hope you are all remaining present, that you're all remaining upright and grounded in your truest intentions, in your truest aspirations, grounded in your true self. One of the things that I love most about the Dharma teachings, about the teachings of the Buddha, is how timeless they are. When we really examine them, when we really take a look deeply at these teachings, we can see how timeless they are, how relevant they remain today. And as a teacher that I recently heard talked about, he said timeless, that word timeless, doesn't mean forever. It doesn't mean that it lasts forever. It really means no time. In other words, that it is not bound by time. It is always present. It is always now. The Dharma teachings, the Buddhist teachings are always now. They are always present in our lives. And I always find that it's important to examine how these teachings that we hear, that we read, that we share together, how these teachings, which are hundreds of years old or thousands of years old, it's important to examine how they are relevant and applicable right now to our modern time, to what we are experiencing, to all that we are experiencing now, their relevance right now in our lives. And so I want to open by sharing a quote with all of you, and perhaps some of you will recognize this quote. Do I contradict myself? Very well then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. Does anyone recognize that quote by any chance? Who it's from?
Walt Whitman.
Walt Whitman, yes. American poet and essayist Walt Whitman. And I think Walt Whitman captured what this being human is about. I am large. I contain multitudes. I think that as human beings living in a complex, oftentimes confusing and ultimately very mysterious world, a very mysterious life, we all truly do contain multitudes. I don't think that as human beings immersed in the relative or conventional experience of the world, that we can be said to be only one thing, any one thing. None of us is only one thing. We are, as human beings, we are layered beings. And thus our experience of the world is also layered. And yet this human mind, this mind that we all have as human beings, this mind is vast, it is open, it is infinite, as we discussed not long ago when Sensei Emyo shared his teaching on the Heart Sutra. We talked about just how vast, open, and infinite this human mind is. And it is a mind that is capable of holding space for all of these layers, all of the multitudes that each one of us contains. And we're currently living in a moment, we're living in a time that I think for many of us, it seems to make very little sense. It's difficult to make sense of it all, to make sense of this world that we're living in. At the very least, it seems almost surreal that all of this is happening. The wars, the conflicts, the deceptions, the political machinations that we're seeing across the globe, and certainly here at home. It's a time when world leaders seem to be so completely consumed with greed, with a lust for more power, more control, dominance over others. A time when some nations feel they're perfectly within their rights to take over, to consume, and/or to destroy other nations, other sovereign nations, perfectly within their rights to openly commit genocide, without a single thought, without a single concern for the rights of other human beings, for the dignity of other human beings. It's a time when rights and laws and freedoms are just being gutted. They're being stripped away after decades or even centuries of being in existence. They're being erased, completely destroyed, completely abandoned. And perhaps worse, it's a time when the leader of what has largely been recognized as the most powerful nation in the world, the leader of nations, openly threatens to commit genocide, to destroy or wipe out an entire civilization. Think about those words for a moment. For a world leader, the leader of the nation that's supposed to be the leader of nations in the world, to openly threaten to destroy or wipe out an entire civilization. And yes, it's absolutely true that I think perhaps we've always been going through many of these things. In one form or another, this has always been happening. This is not something new. My teacher used to say there's nothing new under the sun. And so yes, perhaps we've always been going through many of these things in one form or another, both here at home and globally. It really isn't anything new. As Genjo pointed out in his talk last week, he talked about how the suffering of the Buddha is still our suffering. The suffering that the Buddha encountered and experienced in his life is still our suffering, hence that timelessness. And Gesho and I, we were recently talking, and Gesho said to me, what we're seeing now, I think we're feeling it more. We're feeling it more powerfully because of social media, because of the global reach. We're seeing it. It's right in our face. And so we're seeing it more. Perhaps that's why it feels so much more powerful, so much more confusing, frustrating. I think it's a time when perhaps all of us, and most of the world, for that matter, I think, is feeling something. Not everyone is going to necessarily be feeling the same thing, but I think we're all feeling something. And in fact, we are perhaps all feeling multitudes. And we absolutely can feel multitudes. We absolutely can. We can experience anger. We can experience frustration, disappointment, fear or anxiety, incredulity, even a bit of embarrassment, shame or guilt, particularly as Americans in this moment. And in feeling these multitudes, we can easily become confused or overwhelmed, as if we shouldn't be feeling this seemingly contradictory mix of emotions. As if we can't feel this incredible mix of emotions. But again, we are large. We contain multitudes. We are capable of holding these multitudes. And I titled my talk this evening, Living in a Paradox, Holding Space for All That We Experience. And my talk this evening was actually inspired by a post that I saw on social media that I read from a woman who's, she's an educator, she's an author, a broadcaster, a wellness coach, a speaker and retreat leader, podcaster, healer, a little bit of everything. Her name is Debbie Brown. And I saw this post from Debbie Brown. And I wanted to share some of what she shared in that post. She spoke about how we are living in a paradox. And she said, a hard truth about being alive right now, in this moment, is that we are living in a paradox. A paradox occurs when two truths exist at the same time, even if they appear contradictory. For example, I love my life and I am unsettled by the world. I am hopeful and I am grieving. Both can be true. And she goes on to say, personal growth no longer exists separate from global instability. When our awareness expands, compartmentalization collapses. Thus, everything in our life, career, spirituality, politics, identity, grief, and joy, all become visible. All of these things come to the surface for us. All of them come into our everyday experience. She says, when we resist paradox and the perceived tension or friction of paradox, and we try to resolve that tension too quickly, we're only trying to simplify complexity to avoid discomfort. Emotional maturity is not choosing one truth. It is developing the capacity to hold both, or to hold multiple truths at once. And oh, how we try. We try so hard to avoid complexity, to avoid discomfort, grasping and trying to cling to comfort, to simplicity, to certainty. We want certainty. We want certain answers. We want things to be just this way. Simple, direct, and certain for us. But Debbie Brown suggests that what we often do when we're faced with paradox, with our own multitudes and the multitudes of life, is that we try to resolve that perceived tension too quickly by simply rejecting or turning away from those multitudes. We want one answer. We want it to be simple. Give me the one answer. It can't be this and that. It can't be both. And so we want to resolve this tension that we feel, this perceived tension with paradox, too quickly, so that we can experience comfort and certainty. We reject the paradoxes of life and of ourselves because we want everything to be simple. But life is not about simplicity. Life is about being fully present to what is and to how life is unfolding in every moment of our experience. And I want to share a short piece. This is from Mark Nepo, from his book, The Book of Awakening. Let the opposing voices in your head speak. They are only finding their part in a larger, yet to be heard song. Being alive is a paradox, an ongoing mix of things that on the surface don't always seem to make sense. But voicing what doesn't seem to make sense helps. It's like an orchestra tuning up to play together. We have no chance of discovering the fullness of our inner music if we don't let the players in our hearts and minds and spirits tune. Often, confusion is the tension of trying to make sense of things too soon, before enough of the inner players have learned their parts. Often experience is the way that the heart and mind and spirit practice what they need to play. Isn't the trail of our relationships the time it takes for the heart to practice its part in the movement we call love? Isn't the trail of our honest questions the time it takes for the mind to practice its part in the movement we call wisdom? Isn't the trail of our changing beliefs the time it takes for the spirit to practice its part in the movement we call God or universe or true nature? And isn't our trail of oneness, those brief moments when everything comes together, isn't this the time it takes for love and wisdom and God or universe or true nature to bring the commonplace in us alive? Mark Nepo in this beautiful piece shares much of the same sentiment that Devi Brown shared in her post. That perceived tension between the seemingly contradictory emotions and experiences in our life, that seeming contradiction is coming from us. They're creations and illusions from our own mind. And we create that mental tension, a kind of cognitive dissonance, because of the difficulty we have in holding more than one truth or experience, the difficulty in holding our multitudes. And this thing we call paradox. Paradox is an extremely powerful word and an important word in the Zen tradition, in Zen practice. Paradox is foundational in Zen training and practice. It is an essential part, an extremely important part of Zen practice. And we resist paradox so much. We don't like paradox very much. We want things, again, to be very straightforward. We want them to be linear. We want them to be very black and white, simple, easy. We want to know the answers all the time to our seemingly paradoxical questions or situations. We like for things to be neatly wrapped and packaged so that we can easily digest and understand them with little thought, little examination, little inquiry. Which is it? I want to know. I need to know. Which emotion should I be feeling? This one or that one? And these questions that arise in us, is this human life precious and beautiful? Or is it messy, chaotic, full of suffering and difficulties, challenges, vexations? Are we all perfect and complete just as we are, lacking nothing? Or do we lack understanding and insight and still need a little improvement, as Suzuki Roshi would say? Do we already have innate Buddha nature or awakened mind? Or do we need to practice to realize enlightenment? Again, which is it? I want to know. It needs to be one or the other. Which is the right answer? This is the story that we tell ourselves. We tell ourselves this story, we create this story in our mind that we can't hold both. We can't experience both at the same time. It can only be one or the other. It must be this one or that one. But the reality of paradox in Zen is that when we really look deeply and we really examine all of these questions deeply, what we come to realize is that it's both. It is both simultaneously. We are always living in paradox. We exist in all of it simultaneously. This life, this human life, we are always living in a paradox. Experientially, the way we experience life, always living in paradox, always experiencing paradox in our lives. But conceptually, as an idea, as a concept, we fight it. We struggle with it. I don't like paradox. It confuses me. I need to resolve this immediately and just pick one already. This is what the mind, the story that the mind creates. And what is paradox? What is this thing that we call paradox? Paradox is defined as a statement, idea, thought, person, or situation. I would also add a feeling or emotion that appears self-contradictory, even absurd or illogical, but upon closer reflection may contain a deeper truth or reality. Paradox often highlights the seeming tensions between opposing ideas or what appear to be opposing ideas. Zen training and practice really show us a different way of looking at paradox. Zen practice teaches us a way of embracing paradox, of working with it, of experiencing and living right in the midst of paradox, living right in the midst of all of these paradoxes that we're constantly experiencing. In Zen, paradox helps us to go beyond our conditioned rational and intellectual thought and to trigger us in direct, experiential, non-dualistic thinking. We're always separating everything into categories. It has to be this, it has to be that. Which one is it? I need to know. It can't be both. It has to be one. I need to know which one, because that feels better. It feels easier. It makes me feel more certainty, and I need to feel that certainty. But Zen teaches us a different way. It teaches us a way of looking at paradox in a very different way. Again, to trigger us in direct, experiential, non-dualistic thinking. Zen has a way of pulling us out of that comfort zone, of that linear, simplistic, black or white thinking, and away from seeking the neat and comfortable answers solely from the intellect. There's a Zen teacher that I always enjoy her teachings very much, Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams. And Rev Angel once gave a teaching that has always stuck with me ever since I heard her say this. She said, we live constantly in this idea, this story of yes, but, right? Everything is yes, but it, but there's this. Yes, but it has to be that. We're always living in yes, but. She says, we need to move towards and be comfortable with yes and. We need to let go of so much of yes but and become more comfortable with yes and. Zen paradox often shows us that the but is often not the answer, but rather the and is. Yes, there's this, and there is also this. Yes, we experience this, and simultaneously, we experience this. And Zen koans, of course, the tradition of Zen koans is one of the most obvious and one of the most wonderful examples of how we view and work with paradox in Zen. And also the many stories and teachings of the Buddhist sutras, they also point to this embracing of paradox. Not running away from paradox, not running away from these seemingly contradictory ideas, but really going deeper, embracing them, looking at those things much more deeply, and seeing that it's not about yes, but often it's about yes, and it's also this, simultaneously, both truths existing simultaneously. The Zen teacher Kriti Kanko, who's a teacher in the Rinzai tradition, and in the Rinzai tradition, of course, there's a heavy emphasis on Zen koans. She says, in our Zen tradition, students are sometimes asked to work with paradoxical stories, dialogues, or questions called koans. But my life as a climate scientist activist and grief ritual facilitator also confronts me with life koans. It involves sitting with wild paradoxes like these. Do I root myself in gratitude at this difficult moment, or allow myself to grieve the state of the world? Does the healing of our society require us to be unyielding, because one has to say no when faced with systematic oppression? Or do I need to be yielding and ready to compromise to create bridges in this divided and polarized world? She goes on to say, the point is not to choose and answer by intellectual analysis, but to stay with the paradox. When we rush and don't embrace the complexity of a paradox to go beyond its superficial duality, we bypass the full emotional and spiritual impact of what is happening around us. And Kriti Kanko, once again in these words that she shares the same view of embracing paradox and not rushing, not moving too quickly to resolve that paradox, not rushing to resolve the perceived conflict that our own mind creates, the story that our own mind creates, the superficial duality and discomfort that we see upon initial examination. We're faced with two opposing things. We see this duality and we want to rush to avoid the discomfort, the uncertainty. We want to rush to resolve it and come up with the one answer, because we think there has to be one answer. It can't be both. But Zen shows us something different. As we confront these challenging times, as we confront all that we're experiencing, and yes, again, we have experienced challenges like this before, right there is the paradox for us to work with, to embrace that paradox, all of those emotions that we're feeling. There's the paradox for us to work with, to embrace, rather than to turn away from it or try to resolve it too quickly, brushing past it because we want the quick and easy answer. Do I root myself in gratitude at this difficult moment, in each difficult moment? Or do I allow myself to grieve the state of the world? Do I root myself in gratitude at this difficult moment or any difficult moment? Or do I allow myself to grieve the state of the world? How about both? How about both of those things? We can fully experience the paradox of both of those things simultaneously. As we see everything that's happening in the world, as we experience all of these things that are happening in the world, all of the injustices, the violence, the wars, the genocide, the racism that we're seeing in the world, that we're seeing right here at home, and we start feeling all of those different emotions, anger, frustration, disappointment, fear, anxiety. All of these things that we're feeling, and we often want to, we start to feel that I can't possibly be feeling all of these things at once over what's happening. I have to pick one. I have to choose which one I need to feel. And once again, we want to rush past the paradox. We want to resolve it too quickly just so that we can experience simplicity, comfort, certainty. But the reality is that we can experience all of it. We can see and grieve the pain and suffering of the world, of this moment, of all that we're feeling and experiencing, and we can still root ourselves in gratitude for this precious life, for this precious opportunity to bear witness, to be a light in the darkness, and to respond with wisdom and with compassion. We can see the suffering, we can be with that suffering, we can feel and experience the anger, the disappointment, the frustration, the fear, and we can also be a light in the world. We can hold all of it and we can continue to practice wisdom and compassion in our lives, to hold all of these things with wisdom and compassion. We can respond with wisdom and compassion to all of these emotions that we're feeling simultaneously. We can be like the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, she who hears the cries of the world and responds to those cries. Each one of us here, we are large. We contain multitudes. Let's embrace those multitudes and get to work.